December 1970, Portland, Oregon. Gert Boyle freezes in her tracks outside the entrance to Columbia Sportswear's modest brick factory. Her 21-year-old son, Tim, looks back at her. Mom?
I don't think I can do this.
Gert has walked through these doors many times before, but now, what lies inside terrifies her. 3 days ago, her husband, Neil Boyle, the boss of Columbia Sportswear, died from a heart attack at the age of 47. Their marriage was typical for the times. Neil made the money, Gert raised the kids. Now, Neil's gone, and she's the new boss of the family's struggling outdoor apparel business, the rare female executive in an industry run by men. Tim clutches his mom's hand. Come on, Mom. You got this. Gert steels herself and enters the building. On the factory floor, Columbia's 40 employees huddle in groups. Their whispered conversations stop the moment they see Gert. She stares at the expectant faces. She doesn't want to be here. She's 46. She shouldn't be a widow. She shouldn't be these people's boss. Fighting back tears, she addresses the team.
Neil's a terrible shock, but things will carry on like before. I'll run the business, but I will need your help.
Stilted applause breaks out. No one's reassured that a housewife who's never had a full-time job is now their boss. As the team scatters, one manager approaches. My condolences, Gert.
Thanks.
So, what do you want me to do?
Sorry?
What should I do? Today, I mean. Neil started each day by telling us what to do.
I don't know. What do you normally do?
Buy cloth.
Maybe do that?
Yeah, but how much and what kind? Gert doesn't know. Neil never discussed work with her. But she senses his tendency to micromanage has drained Columbia's staff of all initiative.
I'll get back to you.
Gert turns to her son.
Maybe your father left some notes. Let's go see.
Gert and Tim rummage through Neil's office, but they find only notepads full of barely legible scrawl and doodles. Gert slumps into the chair that used to be Neil's and sobs. 3 days ago, she was happily married. Now, she's a single mom with a grown son, a teenage daughter, and a business she doesn't understand. The odds are against her. But she will surprise everyone, and especially herself, when she turns this small failing business into an outdoor apparel titan.
Small businesses are facing a moment of change unlike anything they've ever seen, and they're looking for resources. Dell Technologies is here to help safeguard your business from modern devices and Windows 10 Pro to providing relevant content for your business's success. Dell Technologies has also assembled an all-star lineup of podcasters to create a virtual conference to share advice and inspiration for small businesses. Search Dell Technologies Small Business Podference on radio.com, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts.
From Wondery, I'm David Brown, and this is Business Wars. In honor of small businesses, Business Wars teamed up with Dell Technologies to bring you two special episodes that tell the inspiring and motivational stories of successful companies that started out small. On our last episode, we heard about how Domino's bounced back after a brush with bankruptcy and a fire that leveled its headquarters. In this episode, a housewife with no experience in business takes over a company that's close to vanishing and turns it into a major player in the sportswear industry. Late December, 1970. Portland, Oregon. Inside Columbia Sportswear's small factory, Gert Boyle sits in her office listening as the company's bookkeeper guides her through the finances.
Last year, the business made $800,000 in revenue.
Gert peers over her half glasses at the statement, searching for the figure.
Oh, I see. Wow. That's a lot.
The bookkeeper raises an eyebrow.
Gert, that's sales, not profit. Once you've paid people's salaries, material costs, shipping, returns, utility bills, printing of catalogs, hiring stalls at trade shows, taxes, and other expenses, there's not much left at all. Oh, listen, Gert. I don't know how much Neil told you, but Columbia, well, it's never really made that much money. The cash flow is so tight that it can only function thanks to the credit from the bank and suppliers.
Gert's face drops. She had no idea. She just assumed the business was doing okay. After all, her father started the business back in 38 after fleeing Nazi Germany. It was a hat store then, but after hats went out of fashion, her dad and her husband turned it into an outerwear manufacturing business. Now, they're both dead, and she's inherited the firm. But the bookkeeper has more bad news.
By my count, Columbia's got a negative net worth of around $400,000. Negative net worth? What does that mean?
A slight, almost undetectable smile creeps on the bookkeeper's lips.
That is the amount of money you personally will owe if you shut down the business tomorrow.
Gert feels sick. She knew Neil had taken out loans against their house just before his death, but she had no idea the company was carrying so much debt. The bookkeeper continues.
After you've done the annual inventory, I can give you a precise figure. Annual inventory? The annual inventory? It's got to be done before year end. Neil always did it himself. I'm not even sure what one is, let alone how to do it. And by year end, it's nearly Christmas already. I could walk you through it. You could? That would be wonderful. For a price. I want my pay doubled to $15,000 a month.
Gert feels like she's been punched in the stomach. This feels like blackmail. Tears well in her eyes.
Seriously? Yeah. I want a raise, and you're gonna give it to me.
Gert's got no choice. The bookkeeper leaves with an inflated paycheck. But the moment the annual inventory's done, Gert's going to relish firing her. But the bookkeeper isn't Gert's biggest problem. It's the suppliers. It's January 1972, and Gert's in her office bracing for a crucial meeting with one of the company's cloth suppliers. The supplier demanded a meeting with the new boss after learning of Neil's death. Gert stands, smooths down her dress, and straightens her back as she opens the door.
Come in.
A grim-faced man with gray hair and dressed in a three-piece suit enters.
I'm Gert. Pleased to meet you.
The supplier stares at Gert's outstretched hand.
You're a woman.
You know, I noticed that when I got up this morning, too.
No, it's just that when I heard the new boss was Gert Boyle, I assumed Gert was a he, maybe one of Neil's cousins or a brother, not his widow.
Sorry to disappoint. Let's sit. You wanted to see me.
The supplier looks pained.
Yes. The thing is, we always provided cloth to Columbia on credit. We did that because we trusted Neil to always pay us back. So, naturally, on hearing he passed, and my sincerest sympathies, I felt it was important to meet his successor.
Well, here I am.
The supplier looks away, and then back.
Yes. Tell me, Gert, what previous experience do you have in the apparel business? Or any business?
Not much. Well, nothing, really. I've been busy the past 22 years raising three kids.
Right. Gert, I'm going to be straight with you. You taking charge puts me and my company in an awkward position. You see, on paper, Columbia is not a solid enough company to supply cloth to on credit. The credit we give this company is earned through trust.
That trust in Columbia came from years of reliably dealing with Neil. And the supplier doesn't trust a housewife at the helm.
I'm sorry, but we can no longer supply cloth on credit. You'll need to pay us up front.
But I'm really trying, and things are going to be rough here for a little while.
I've made my decision. I just can't take the risk. This place could come tumbling down. Good day, Gert.
But this supplier isn't alone. As word spreads through the trade that Columbia Sportswear is now run by a housewife, other suppliers start demanding cash up front before delivery. And with payment, Columbia's cash flow gets more precarious, pushing the company closer and closer towards bankruptcy. It's December 1971, and in Portland, Oregon, Gert's in her bank manager's office. She's been running Columbia Sportswear for a year now. The bank manager looks at her with a mix of pity and condescension.
Well, last year didn't go very well, did it?
I'm really trying, but I had to learn the ropes, and there were, well, are some supplier issues, and this bookkeeper
Gert,
just...
Columbia's sales are down from $800,000 to $600,000. It's a disaster, and let's be honest here. There's no reason to think you're going to reverse that trend. So I'm sorry to say that in light of these figures, we must withdraw Columbia's line of credit.
Gert feels her world collapsing. Without bank credit, Columbia's toast. Her father started this company. Her husband continued it. It's not just business. It's family.
No, please. There's gotta be a way. I know Columbia never made much of a profit, but there must be an alternative. There must be.
The bank manager purses his lips.
Well, you could sell the business. If you agree to that, I could keep the credit going while you find a buyer.
Gert's not keen, but if Columbia goes bust, she will lose everything, including her home. Maybe this sale will give her enough to clear the company's debts and tide her over while she job hunts.
Okay, I'll sell. I'm tired of the struggle anyhow.
It's summer 1972, and in her office inside Columbia's factory, Gert's about to sign away the business. The buyer is a local businessman with experience in the garment trade. He seems like a good person to sell to. Gert passes a contract to the buyer.
I got the contract drafted based on our previous discussions.
Actually, there's a few more additions to the terms I want before I'm signing.
Gert freezes. She thought this deal was just a signature away.
Oh, okay. Like what?
I want a non-compete clause that stops you from working for any other company in the outerwear industry for the next 5 years.
Gert tries to maintain a straight face.
Seriously? Given the mess I've made here, shouldn't you be insisting that I go work for your competition instead?
The businessman isn't amused.
Is that a yes or a no?
Yeah, fine. Whatever. That it?
No. There are a few things I want subtracted from the purchase price. I don't want Columbia's zipper inventory or the factory either, but after paying off your creditors, you'll still be walking away with $1,400.
Gert glares in disbelief at the man. Her mind is racing.
$1,400? $1,400. $1,400.
Gert springs to her feet. She's only 5'3", but 18 months of bottled-up rage, grief, frustration, and stress now boil over.
$1,400. Let me tell you where you can shove that.
The surprised businessman's eyes bulge.
For that amount, I'd rather run this company into the ground myself.
She points at the door.
Out. Get out now.
Gert's had enough of people pushing her around and taking advantage of her. She's taking back control. Columbia Sportswear is no longer for sale. And, to her shock, the bank approves of her decision to kick the buyer out the door. The bank manager sees it as a sign that she's got the fire and drive needed to save the business. Instead of pulling her credit, the bank extends it for 6 months. But that's not long. If Gert can't pull Columbia out of the quicksand by then, it'll all be over. It's summer, 1972. A few days since Columbia Sportswear boss Gert Boyle won a six-month reprieve from the bank. In her office, Gert and her son Tim scan the list of the company's employees. It's about to shrink. With sales down and cash tight, this move is not optional.
He can definitely go. He still treats me like I'm Neil's wife rather than his boss.
I agree, Mom. And frankly, I don't really know what he actually does.
Gert strikes through the guy's name with a red marker pen.
You know, we should have done this months ago. When I started, I just thought your father must have hired these people for a good reason. I felt obliged to keep them.
Yeah, but it's your business now, Mom.
Our business. But you know, reducing costs just buys us time. It doesn't fix anything. We need outside help.
Outside help? From who?
The bank manager suggested we invite some successful businessmen onto an informal advisory board. I think it's a good idea.
Mom, we can't afford to pay them.
We won't pay them.
Why would they do it then?
I don't know. Pity? Kindness? Ego? Something to put on their resume. What does it even matter? It doesn't hurt to ask. If no one wants to help us, then we're no worse off.
A few weeks later, Columbia's new advisory board gathers around Gert's kitchen table for its first meeting. The five advisors she's recruited are all experienced local businessmen. Among them is an executive from a small nearby shoe company called Nike. Gert watches as the advisors flick through copies of Columbia's product catalog. They're not impressed.
How many pages is this? It's like a telephone book.
Huh? You sell baseball bats too? I thought Columbia made apparel.
What's this, a hats section?
That's because my father started Columbia as a hat store, long before we made our first hunting and fishing jackets.
One of the businessmen shuts his catalog and turns to Gert.
Gert, you got hundreds of products, but Columbia's too small to do all of them well. A lot of these have got to be loss makers. You need to weed them out.
Another of the advisors interjects.
Actually, I go further.
How so?
I get rid of everything except the products that are truly unique to Columbia. Look at this raincoat here. There's probably hundreds of companies making coats just like it.
My husband designed that.
Then keep one as a memento. Gert, just because you're attached to a product doesn't mean your customers are. What's your bestseller?
Gert flicks through a catalog and finds the page with a multi-pocketed vest.
This. I don't know anyone else who makes something quite like it. It's designed for, and with the help, of anglers. It's got pockets for bait, for hooks.
Now that's what I'm talking about. It sells and it's unique. Columbia needs more of that, and less of the rest.
Gert runs with that advice. She eliminates product after product and refocuses on garments designed with the help of hikers, skiers, anglers, and hunters. By the time she's done, Columbia's catalog is down from 56 pages to just 12. The businessmen also persuade Gert to start making clothes for other companies. Soon, Columbia is making jackets for the likes of Eddie Bauer and Land's End. Those deals help Columbia repair its finances and reassure its suppliers that it's got a future. It's late 1972, and Columbia's six-month credit extension is up. In downtown Portland, Gert heads into her bank manager's office. She's come ready to impress. She's wearing her best dress and has a folder full of financial statements tucked under her arm. The bank manager sits back in his chair.
So, Gert, how's business?
Improving. We've reduced headcount by a third and terminated all product lines that were losing money or just breaking even.
The bank manager sits up. This isn't the housewife he first met 2 years ago. Back then, she seemed way out of her depth. Now, she sounds like a boss. Gert opens her folder and hands him a profit and loss statement. When she inherited the company, she could barely understand these reports.
Revenues are growing. We've streamlined the number of products. That's because we're doing private label manufacturing, but that's just temporary. Once we're strong enough, we're going to dedicate ourselves fully to our own products. You know, my competitors, they want to charge a premium, but there's no reason why quality and low prices can't go hand in hand. So that's what I'm going to give customers. And that's what's going to make Columbia stand out.
The bank manager scans the numbers and smiles. Columbia's profits remain slim, but it's clear this business is quickly moving in the right direction. Gert peers intently at the bank manager over her half-rimmed glasses.
Well, are you extending our credit line or what?
The banker leans back in his chair and smiles.
Of course, Gert.
In the years that follow, Columbia becomes a leading maker of skiing, hunting, hiking, and fishing gear. By 1995, it owns 30% of the U.S. outdoor apparel market. Today, it's a world-famous brand with annual sales of $2.5 billion a year. Next, we'll talk with an expert about the Columbia story, a story of survival, resilience, and ultimately, success. Hey, it's David Brown, host of Business Wars. And together with other top podcasters, I'm one of the hosts of the Dell Technologies Small Business Podference, a virtual conference via podcasts that shares advice and inspiration for small businesses, something that's more important than ever during these challenging times. Tune in right now at DellTechnologiesPodference.com and check out tips and inspiration to help your business. And if you need tech advice, Dell Technologies advisors will be happy to assist you in finding the right solutions for your business. I'm David Brown, and this is Business Wars. Columbia Sportswear saw a 40% decline in overall revenue last year. Blame it on the pandemic-related store closures. But like most businesses during this time, technology came to the rescue. The company saw a 72% spike in e-commerce. For more on how the brand has adapted and innovated during the pandemic, I'm speaking with Will Taylor. He is the gear director for Outside Magazine, and he's been keeping track of all of this. Will, welcome to Business Wars.
Thanks for having me, David.
Before we get into the business innovation and adaptation of it all, I first want to ask you about people's relationship with the outdoors during this pandemic and how you see outdoor apparel as having perhaps played a role in all that.
We had a big boom in participation in the outdoors in general during the pandemic. It's kind of the only place that all of us felt safe. I mean, there was varying degrees of that, but generally speaking, it was the place for us to get out of our houses, to walk our dogs, to go for a run. And that led people to camping more on the weekends, to riding bikes more, just getting outdoors in general. And, you know, the more time you spend outside, the more you realize it's nice to have nice apparel and gear to make that happen, to keep you comfortable when you're out there.
You know, with all these people sort of re-entering or entering for the first time the outdoors, as you were describing it there, Will, how have brands tried to shift to tailor their efforts toward these new potential customers, especially as they try to continue to supply their existing ones?
Yeah, we saw a big shift to online marketing, as you might imagine. People are shopping on their computers, So they're getting targeted there. But what they also shifted is who they were targeting. So for these more core outdoor brands, like you think Columbia owns Mountain Hardwear, which is much more of like one of those core outdoor brands, like in the outside space. And they kind of pointed their advertising more at the people that were entering the outdoors versus those seasoned consumers that had been there for a while, which I think was a really smart business move by these companies, because we want to welcome these people to the outdoors and give them the knowledge that they need to, you know, be comfortable and enjoy themselves when they are.
So sort of an almost educational aspect to it.
Yeah, and that's super important. There's a lot to learn in these spaces. And, you know, we don't want to be daunting as an industry. The outdoors are daunting enough. We want to kind of bring people in and teach them the appropriate things so that they can enjoy themselves, you know, without freaking them out in any way.
Well, let's talk about before the pandemic hit then, because you think of some of these names, Columbia, Patagonia, of course, North Face. Where were they in the landscape? And I'm particularly curious about how you saw a brand like Columbia fitting into that landscape.
For the past few years, the outdoor apparel industry has really been growing kind of at the forefront of kind of this environmental ethos, with climate change being discussed a lot. Brands like Patagonia are really part of that larger cultural conversation, even beyond the outdoor world. Mm-hmm. But they keep that foot in the core outdoor world for sure. I mean, they're a highly respected brand for, you know, intense outdoor pursuits like mountaineering, for instance. Columbia has really done a good job of creating this mass appeal and kind of branching between both worlds in a bigger way than Patagonia has, because they still make quality products, but they're more affordable and they're kind of less towards the pointy end and that specialized end, which Patagonia kind of peddles in.
Yeah. Well, after a very unusual year, here we have the country slowly starting to open back up in some areas, I guess, faster than others. As we continue to adjust to this new normal, how do you think Columbia is poised to respond? I mean, is there a scenario where Columbia perhaps makes more of an investment in brick and mortar in-person sales and sort of bucks the trend we've seen toward more and more e-commerce?
Yeah, I think it's definitely possible. I think people are hungry for those in-person shopping experiences. I mean, on our end, we're always recommending, this is prior to the pandemic, that our readers go out and try things on, because you never really know till you wear that thing, like how it's going to fit your body.
Right.
And a lot of this performance stuff only performs as well as it fits you.
Mm.
So we've kind of always been big advocates of that and will be in the future when it is safe to do so. You know, I think there's that element of it, but I think, right, people just miss shopping in person.
I'm wondering, what are you anticipating when it comes to, say, the widespread repercussions that we'll be experiencing, perhaps as the pandemic begins to wind down, we hope? Because when I think of what's happened to a lot of businesses during this pandemic, it's the inability to maintain stock.
Sure.
And I sort of wonder, especially since we've been, you know, we've been focused a lot on supply chain, do you see any permanent changes in the industry?
I think it's definitely possible. I think what this has forced companies to do is to, you know, rethink how they do business. How nimble can they be? You know, how fast can they pivot to, say, making face masks or something like that? So I think something like seasonality and how many products you launch per season might change. So yeah, I think there definitely could be repercussions in good ways from that as a result.
Will Taylor is the gear director for Outside Magazine. He's been keeping on top of all the changes in the outdoor gear industries as we've been trying to make our way through this unprecedented period. Will, thanks so much for taking time to speak with us on Business Wars. It's a real delight to get to say hello.
Thanks, David. It was fun.
From Wondery, this is Business Wars. This special episode is brought to you by Dell Technologies. If you like our show, please give us a 5-star rating and a review, and be sure to tell your friends. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, the Wondery app, or wherever you're listening right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app to listen 1 week early and ad-free. Another way you can support the show is by filling out a small survey at wondery.com/survey and tell us which business stories you'd like to hear. A quick note about recreations you've been hearing.
In most cases, we can't know exactly what was said. Those scenes are dramatizations, but they're based on historical research. I'm your host, David Brown. Tristan Donovan wrote this story. Karen Lowe is our senior producer and editor. Edited and produced by Emily Frost. Voice acting by Michelle Phillippe. Sound design by Kyle Randall. Kate Young is our associate producer. Our producer is Dave Schilling. Our executive producers are Jenny Lauer Beckman and Marshall Louie. Created by Hernan Lopez for Wondery. Hey, thanks so much for listening to this special episode of Business Wars. And remember, if you're a small business looking for resources, Dell Technologies is here to help safeguard your business with modern devices and Windows 10 Pro and to provide relevant content for your business's success. Speaking of which, Dell Technologies Small Business Podference is available on radio.com, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. Tune in there or at DellTechnologiesPodference.com for tips and inspiration to help your business.